Hello and welcome to the Potential Psychology Podcast. I'm your host, Ellen Jackson, and it's my mission to share the science of human behaviour in a practical, fun and inspiring way. In each podcast episode, I interview an expert from the fields of psychology, well-being, leadership, parenting or high performance. I pick their brain to uncover what they know about living well. What tips do they have for you and I? And I quiz them about how they apply their expertise in their own life. Join me as we discover simple, science-backed ways to live, learn, flourish, and fulfill your potential. Welcome back. This is episode 8. My guest is Jules Clancy from Stone Soup, and Jules is a food scientist, a winemaker, an author, a photographer, founder of the Stone Soup Virtual Cooking School, and a passionate advocate of minimalism and simplicity, especially in the kitchen. Welcome, Jules.
Thanks, Ellen. I'm very excited to be on episode 8. It's my lucky number.
Oh, is that? Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, it was meant to be, obviously.
Yeah.
Now, can you tell us a little bit about Stone Soup, just to kick off the conversation?
So Stone Soup's a blog I started way back in 2005. So I actually read an article in the Sydney Morning Herald about this whole thing of food blogs and just got heavily into it and just was reading blogs and really loving it. And I'd always dreamed of being a food writer and writing cookbooks and stuff, but it seemed impossible to get into. And then I was like, wow, I could start a blog and just, you know, see how that goes. So I decided to, start by myself, bought a camera and started taking photos of my dinners and posting the recipes online.
Okay. And it's evolved since, hasn't it?
Yeah. So it kind of, it was a blog and just a hobby for a long time and just a place for me to record my recipes because it's terrible when you cook this amazing mushroom soup and then you're like, oh, what was in, 6 months later, it's mushroom season again and you're trying to, you can't remember. But it kind of evolved into me, wanting to help people more with their cooking. And I could really, the blog kind of developed at the same time that I discovered minimalism and simplicity. And I started applying, the principles of minimalism in the kitchen and came to, kind of really reducing the number of ingredients in recipes and really keeping things as simple as possible to help people with eating well without, all the faff that can go around it.
Yeah. And I think that, and as much as I like food personally, and I do, although I will be honest and admit that I prefer other people to cook it for me, it's really this philosophy.
It's always nicer when someone else cooks.
I know. And when you're a mum and you've got kids and you've got to feed a family, yes, it is a necessity. So we'll come back to talking a bit about the recipes themselves. But what really drew me to you, I suppose, was this philosophy behind minimalism and simplicity, particularly in the kitchen, and how that kind of plays out in everyday life for you. So where did you first come across the concept, I suppose, and what drew you to it?
Minimalism I discovered through a blog called Zen Habits, which I don't know if you've come across, Leo Babauta, like amazing guy. And I was just loved reading all his stuff and really took the lessons that he was, because he's, about implying simplicity to parenting, to health, to exercise, to everything. And Leo was really my gateway into the world of simplicity and just, experiment. If it all comes down to just, I like to do little, I'm a scientist by background, I love to do a little experiments on myself. So I just started, just trying, seeing if I got rid of a few things, how would it turn out? Or if I, left a few ingredients out of, I didn't put garlic and onion in, say I just put garlic in, how would it taste? And kept being surprised by when I actually stripped things back that things tasted just as good, if not better. And it just made my life easier. So I just kept going and experimenting and playing around with it.
Okay. And you do this in the context of you have two boys, yes?
Yes. Yeah. I've got a 4.5-year-old and a 2-year-old.
Okay. So little.
They're little, yeah. yeah. And they're not adventurous eaters at all. And being really simple in the kitchen really helps with them as well, particularly with my oldest one. His taste is very, very plain. He doesn't even like tomato ketchup. Like he likes every plain food. So keeping it simple is really, really helpful for him. And I guess, just you have children as well. So just feeding a family, it's like the easier you can make it for yourself, the better it is. So our weeknight meals are very all about simplicity.
Can you give us an example? What did you have for dinner last night?
Well, actually, it was ultra simple, Ellen, because I was fasting last night.
Oh, okay, that's very easy.
So I was fasting, my husband was fasting, but the boys had some sausages and potatoes and carrots and some parmesan cheese grated over the top of that kind of thing.
Beautiful.
They were happy. Yeah, they were happy. We were probably not so happy because we were fasting, but that's a bit of a challenge to be fasting and then still need to prepare food for the family. So I love fasting because it makes me feel great and it's really good for, I have type 2 diabetes. It helps me manage my blood sugar, but it's, preparing food when you haven't eaten for 24 hours is a challenge.
I can imagine. I don't think I could. Well, I'm sure I could do it if I put my mind to it or if I had the right.
Of course, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's a good mental practice.
yeah, I can imagine it would be. And so perhaps last night wasn't such a great example. What you know, if you were cooking a nice meal for the family, perhaps for a special occasion, but still keeping it simple, what would you do?
What would I do? Well, there's so many. I don't know where to
One example.
Well, I guess like tonight we're going to have a curry. So, just have a Thai beef curry. I've already cooked it I cooked a heap of brisket last weekend that we had that was barbecued. And so I've got some leftover brisket. So I'll just heat that up and then I'll cook it with some sweet potato and then I'll make some egg fried rice to go with it. And the boys will probably not have very much curry because they're very sensitive to chili, mm-hmm. but they'll love the fried rice and I'll put some cashew in that for them. So they're getting, and it's got eggs. So they're getting some good protein and some peas. At least there's some greens on their plates. Mm-hmm. We'll have the curry. My husband will have some of the fried rice and then I eat fairly low carbs. So I'll also cook some cabbage to go with it for me or some cauliflower or some, I haven't decided yet. Yeah. But we'll have some veg. Yeah, it's trying to, just looking at ways that I can get something for everyone in the meal kind of thing without trying to cook two separate meals.
Yeah, and I think that's probably, I mean, certainly for me in terms of as my kids, so my boys now are 9 and 6, but I remember that point at which I went, you know what, this is too hard for me to keep cooking two separate meals. I do like a children's meal and then an adult's meal and we were serving it at different times. You know, we'd have sort of earlier meals for the kids and then we would eat later and I was just finding, in the context of a busy life and a busy day and all the other things that come along with having particularly small children, it started to become overwhelming. So for me, it was starting to think about how can I simplify that a bit and deciding that, right, this now we need to start eating as a family and what's that going to look like? So I'm guessing this is part of the philosophy behind your approach as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We eat pretty much every night apart from Saturday night. So my husband and I have date night and the boys have dinner early, but the rest of the week we, sit down together at the table as a family and eat together. I think it's such a great ritual and a great habit to get into with the family. You probably know there's heaps of research on, children that families that eat together at the dinner table have, better life outcomes kind of thing, but their grades are better and all that sort of stuff. So I'm a huge believer in family meals. And I used to hate early dinner, but now I'm loving the, 6 o'clock dinner. And we're going to Sydney next week and I'm looking forward to going to rest. I love it when restaurants open at 5 or 5:30. we can all go as a family and eat at with bananas.
So, eat together.
Yeah, it's a really great positive to do. Yeah, it's one of my favorite times of day for sure.
Lovely.
The way I really approach family meals is I try and make the main thing to be something that we can all eat. Curry tonight's not probably a great example, but if it's a roast chicken or whatever, and then mix up the side. So make a nice salad for me and Glenn and the boys all roast some potatoes or something like that. So it's like I don't have to cook two different meals. It's but everyone's getting something that they're happy with.
Okay. And how do you find, and how does your audience find, because you put together recipes and they're all there on your blog and you've put together cookbooks. So this is all kind of this idea of simplifying the family meal, simplifying your ingredients, is all out there for our lovely listeners. And I will put all the links together so that they can find that stuff as well. But how do you find that this whole process makes you feel and makes your audience feel?
The simplification process?
Yeah.
Well, it makes life easier, and it also makes it more enjoyable, because like the easier your meal, like the less ingredients you're getting out, you know, the easier it is to prepare, the less, you know, dishes that you're using, the less cleanup you have. It makes the whole process so much more fun, and you really don't have to sacrifice flavor or health to do that. So I tend to look at getting my variety over the, you know, weeks and fortnight, rather than every, you know, each meal has to have five different veggies in it. I'll be like, I'm just gonna have a big bowl of broccoli tonight, but tomorrow night we'll have a big heap of roast cauliflower. So it just makes it more fun, Ellen, and more enjoyable and less stressful. And there's no downside to it as I've come across.
Yeah.
And also just, you know, simplifying the equipment side of it too. Like, kitchens can get cluttered really easily. So, you know, I'm a real stickler for if I'm not using something, like our toaster broke just before Christmas and we don't eat a lot of toast. And I was like, well, I can use the grill. Like, I just said to my husband, like, you know, let's just have a go, see if we need a toaster or not. And, you know, we haven't bought a new toaster. We're not missing the toaster, and I've got more space for my cookbooks. It's awesome. So, I love having space and having an uncluttered kitchen. Just it's nice to be able to walk into the kitchen at the end of the day and not have to, you know, move a heap of things to be able to find space to chop. You know, it's just, it makes the whole experience a lot more pleasant.
I like that idea of thinking about what you get, like your food groups and what have you, over the course of, say, a fortnight, rather than that. I think certainly it's my perception that there's a lot of pressure, perhaps, whether it's social prep or the internet, or, you know, to be cooking these amazing meals for your family every day, and you need to make sure that, you know, your children are getting every, you know, all the dairy they're supposed to, all the fiber they're supposed to, all the veggies, and you know, when you think about it, that's just overwhelming.
I know. And if you, if you try and approach approach nutrition from that kind of nutritionist perspective, it's really overwhelming, Ellen. So my approach is just, you know, for me, I mentioned, like, I have type 2 diabetes, so I need to eat low carb for that. But if I didn't, like, as long as you're eating, like, our home cooked meals most of the time, and it's, you know, mostly stuff that's real food, like, that's, you know, it's veggies and it's not from a packet, then you're going to be fine. and I think there is a bit too much pressure. And I think the whole, you know, rise of the celebrity chef, you know, it's interesting that there's so many cooking shows and there's so many cookbooks, and cookbook sales are like one of the few book sales that have been growing over the last years. But the people that are like the chefs, like, they're all about just making the food taste amazing, which is great and great for a treat. But for home cooking, it's really not, you know, it's not necessary. And I think it puts too much expectation on the average cook who doesn't have, you know, someone to clean up and someone to chop and someone to prep. So yeah, that we need more people that are just promoting the whole simplicity and not putting that pressure on ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Now, your background is in food science. So you are a food scientist. Tell us, what does, I have to be honest, I don't know much at all about food science. So can you explain to us what a food scientist does?
So my last job was working for Arnott's. It's biscuits in their product development team. I was part of their Tim Tam team, so designing new Tim Tams. As a food scientist, it was my job to take, like, the marketing team would come up with a brief for that they want the new white Tim Tam was my last product I worked on. Mm-hmm. And so it would be my job to translate that from an idea into prototypes, and then we'd eventually scale it up into the factory and turn it into a new product that we were working with. So it was really good fun, Ellen.
Yeah.
To taste chocolate for a living, you know, it was like, not so good for the waistline. Being a food scientist, I was specializing in the kind of product development side of things. and yeah, in food manufacturing. So
okay,
it was good, but it was kind of a bit conflicting with my health interests.
I can imagine. So, type 2 diabetes.
Yeah, exactly. So when I decided to go out on my own with my blog and start my cooking school, I was sad to leave that role behind because it was fun, but this is much more in line with my, philosophy and a much nicer way to be able to help people rather than going to a party and, what do you do? I design Tim Tams, and invariably it'd be like the least healthy person in the room would be like, really? and you'd be like, oh, I'm so sorry. I've been like perpetuating this.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting, isn't it? I work as a workplace psychologist. One of the things that I talk about a lot in workplaces is this idea of, to be truly content at work and engaged in what you do and therefore get the well-being benefits as well as the productivity and, work satisfaction, there has to be a good alignment between your own personal values and the values of what your organization does, what you're doing, perhaps what your team does and some of that cultural stuff. So that's an interesting, perhaps an eventual misalignment between what you were doing and your own personal values.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess when I was in my 20s, I wasn't so interested in the health aspect, so it wasn't so important. But yeah, it kind of came at a time when I was getting more interested in that. So yeah. I'm a good example, Ellen.
Yeah. Well, and a fun one too, because if I share your example, I get to talk about Tim Tams, which everyone would
know. Yeah, that's right.
Kind of relate to. And from a you mentioned before that, because you have a science background, you do a bit of experimentation, you use that process. What if you were to train? I'm just interested, if you were to train as a food scientist, what do you actually learn?
Oh, what do you learn?
Yeah.
So it's a science degree and it's just focused. So you learn kind of like the first few years of just like general science. So you're learning about biology, physics, chemistry, maths. And then the later years, it kind of go into more, we study nutrition, we study food chemistry. So actually looking at the chemistry behind food. So specifically, so you kind of get the general chemistry. And then there's actually people that teach, the actual chemistry side. We look at the food engineering side because the equipment's really important to making food and manufacturing food. And yeah, and then there's the nutrition, then microbiology, which was my area of specialty. So that's like a big part of it because fermentation's really, really key in a lot of food manufacturing. And then, stats and all that sort of stuff as well. So it was a good general science, but then in the later years, really kind of specifically for food stuff. And we also learned about like sensory science, so how to evaluate products and how to use the language to describe food so that you could communicate with the marketing team, so you could be, nuance out if something wasn't right, how we wanted to change the texture or the flavor profile or whatever to improve it. And also, the sensory side of evaluating with customers, like testing prototypes before we launched a product to tweak and design it and stuff. So yeah, it was great because it was quite a broad science degree because it covered all those different disciplines, but with the blinkers on of looking at food. So it was really great fun to do it.
Yeah.
So we got to we'd had labs where we got to make sauerkraut or we'd can jam. Honours thesis, I looked at the bacterial populations in blue vein and camembert cheese, which meant I had to eat blue vein and camembert cheese. Awesome. It was fun. But my self-experimentation is more just, things for a couple of weeks and seeing how it makes me feel. So, the fasting is something that I'm experimenting with at the moment. My toaster, things like that. So there's not a lot. A sample space of one, so there's not a lot of, and I don't do any statistical analysis on it, Ellen. So I'm in some ways not very scientific scientist.
No, but I think that, and I don't know because I know a lot of non-scientists do this too, but I know, that process of, I suppose, testing and learning, trying something, paying attention to how it makes you feel, how it makes your family operate, behavior, all of those sorts of things for me as a psychologist is part of how we learn and grow and, develop, you know, is to constantly test things and learn things and try it and see what works and what doesn't work and do more of what works. And that process is something I talk about a lot. And I think that's very much what you're doing there and what you were then able to share with your audience.
Yeah. It's fun, Ellen. It's really good fun. So, but you're right. Yeah, it's like the way that we learn and grow. It's really, it's great.
Fabulous. And you're also a winemaker.
I was a winemaker for a few years. So my career, I started out doing with food science, and then I was working for Kellogg's for a long time. And then I decided that I wanted to be a winemaker. So I went and started studying winemaking and worked in the industry for about 5 years, which was great because I got to travel with that. It's like, so I lived in California for a while, lived in France for a while, and, you know, in different parts of Australia as well. But it's really hard work, Helen. And it doesn't pay very well. So it was great. And I wasn't the world's best winemaker. Like, there's some people that just have that natural ability, and my palate isn't that great. And I was just always struggling with it. So I came to a point where I just decided to go back to food science and give it a rest.
Yeah.
So,
well, it was testing and learning, wasn't it?
Yes, it was very much testing and learning. Yeah. And my liver is very happy that I made that decision.
the better health choice in the end.
Yes.
And while we're kind of, you said that you know, you traveled a lot and moved and lived in different places as part of that kind of, I suppose, experiment in your life and career, but you've also moved from the big city now to regional Australia with your family, yes?
Yes. So we live in Womboyne, which is just outside of Canberra, so on the Sydney side of Canberra. So we're just on 5 acres, lots of trees, lots of kangaroos, lots of space. It's really, really lovely. And the great thing is, like, with Canberra, it's only, you know, 30-minute drive to be in the heart of the CBD. So my husband can work and he doesn't have a huge commute. Like, his commute's less than most Sydney-siders.
Yeah, absolutely.
We just love it. It's a quiet, having space. Got my veggie garden, although it's really dry here at the moment. So I've had to like scale back my veggie growing because I just don't have enough water at the moment. But we love it. I can't imagine like ever moving back to Sydney or into a big city. I love visiting, but only for a couple of days. I really find the energy when I'm in the city now, like it, for a little bit, it's great. And then I just go, whoa, it's like too much. And the traffic, it's just like, oh, get me home.
We did similarly. We moved from Sydney to Ballarat here in regional Victoria five and a half years ago. And it was interesting because I went back, my husband and I went back for a function, I don't know, 6 months ago now. And when we arrived I'd lived in Sydney for 12 years. So I had a fond place in my heart. And we drove in and I saw the Harbour Bridge and I saw the Opera House, and it also looked so amazing.
It's so beautiful, isn't it? Yeah.
I got all nostalgic. I was like, oh, you know, I feel, you know, I'm missing this and I've lost this. And that was on the Friday night. By the Sunday afternoon, when we were driving through the traffic to try and get back to the airport, I was, right, I'm over
it.
I want to see the trees. Then I want to have, you know, that ease of access to everything. And for me, it has been part of, I think, for us as a family, simplifying life. And I'm assuming that might be part of the driver for you as well. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Not having to get a crazy big mortgage and being able to have, space for the kids to run around. And, I do have to worry about them getting bitten by snakes. It's tiger snake central here, but we've made it through the summer with only one snake this summer. So,
so far, so good.
Yeah. I'm happy that summer's over.
So if you had, we've talked about testing and learning and simplicity and the importance of kind of matching your values with what you do. If you had maybe three tips for someone who wanted to create a bit of simplicity in their life or maybe in their kitchen and in their family meals, what would they be?
Okay. So I guess in your kitchen, like decluttering your kitchen is huge. Like it's amazing how many plates and pots and pans and stuff. So you don't have to do like this huge clean out, but I just do it like on a shelf or a drawer by drawer basis. And when I first started, that's how I did it. It was just like slowly. And I just put a box in the garage or in a shed. It's in the shed now. And just if I go through a drawer and go, look at the things. And if there's something that you haven't used for 6 months, just put it out in the shed. And then, in 6 months' time, you can have a look at your box in the shed. And if you haven't bought the thing back inside, you can pretty safe that you don't need it. So you can, I donate things to charity after that. So yeah, that's kind of like decluttering, I think is really huge. And you don't realize how much kind of mental bandwidth the stuff takes up until you remove it. So that's really huge. I'm also like keeping my pantry simple. I really am a huge believer in that. So again, rather than trying to do a big clean out, every few months I'll just go through one shelf, or I might go through my spice box. Although my husband's going through a phase of, he cooks dinner on Sunday nights, and he's going through a phase of cooking Indian food. So there's like the spices keep coming in and I keep taking them out. But yeah, just going through things and kind of editing and cleaning out. And it makes it a lot easier. And then in terms of cooking, I think, choosing recipes that are simple is a great start. So head over to my blog if you want some recipe ideas. But just when you're thinking of what your meal is going to be, just questioning to yourself first, like, do I really need to have, carrots and broccoli and sweet potato? Or would this be just lovely with just the broccoli? Just asking yourself the question before you go ahead and do it, and just seeing how it turns out. And I have a couple of articles on my blog about simplifying recipes where I've actually taken, a recipe from, Ottolenghi, I don't know, English cookbook writer, that's got 25 ingredients, and just showed you how you can cut it down to a few ingredients. And of course it tastes different, but you're still going to get a delicious meal out of it. So yeah, that's probably my trick too. And yeah, like back to the experimentation thing, I think, and just trying it out, just seeing, what happens if you get rid of your toaster for a while. It's you might decide that you love your toaster and you're going to invest in an Rolls Royce toaster, and that's awesome. Like, but it's good to go through that process. It's really fun.
And I like that you mentioned mental clutter before, in relation to cleaning out your kitchen. I know for me, if I do those sorts of clean outs, just opening a drawer and going, oh, it's so clean and empty.
Yeah, no, and it looks nice. Yeah, and putting things away is so much easier.
Yeah. And how that correlates to that idea of mental clutter, that, we can be so busy and feel so overwhelmed by what we feel are our obligations, and our commitments and, looking after other people, et cetera, and to be able to kind of strip things back, even in something as simple as a kitchen drawer, to kind of alleviate that sense of, I'm already overwhelmed, and now, oh my God, I can't find the potato peeler in here anywhere because it's so
exactly. Yeah, it seems like a little thing that wouldn't have such an impact on your well-being, but I love it, Ellen. Like, it feels nice and calming, and it makes you want to spend time in the kitchen. And the other thing, like in terms of improving well-being and improving cooking, is like reframing the way you see cooking. Or actually, what an experiment I've been doing probably about 6 months ago was just reframing how I see cleaning up at the end of a meal. Cause I used to hate that part of cooking, and I used to think that it was, just a necessary evil, and, you'd get the kids to bed and then come back to the kitchen and just be a mess. And I used to think, oh, we've got half an hour's work here before I can sit on the couch. And I thought, challenged myself to think, what if I reframed this time as my me time actually starts now rather than when I sit on the couch? So that simple idea of like looking at it in a different way. So I've got podcasts like yours that I listen to. I've got, or audio books. So I get my headphones on, I make myself a cup of tea, and I just like kind of get into my audio book and do the cleaning, and, end up with a really lovely clean kitchen. And I feel like I've had some me time already before I sit on the couch. So that's been really a really fun experiment that I've really, really loved working on. Something that, because I don't think there's not many people, apart from my sister maybe, who love the cleaning up aspect of cooking. So that can be something for people to try out.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's a really good example of the power of our ability to change our thinking that then allows a change in how we feel. So you're saying that, you know, beforehand, you know, the thoughts were, oh my God, this is, and I know because I have these thoughts too. It's like, oh, this is a hassle. I hate it. It's not fair. How come I, you know, everyone else, and I'm not. And the consequence there is feeling crappy about it, feeling overwhelmed, feeling like it's unfair. You know, you have all those kind of, I suppose, negative feelings. But what you've done is just said, right, I'm going to think about this differently and think about this as me time and put a couple of, you know, tools in place there, the podcast and the cup of tea and the headphones and what have you. And all of a sudden the feeling changes.
Yeah. And it's so much nicer. And yeah. And I used to have a deal with Glenn where I would clean up and then it was his job to wipe down the benches. But so many mornings I'd wake up and he would like, wouldn't have wiped down the benches. And it used to drive me crazy. So now it's like, that's just part of my, like, I don't have that expectation on him anymore. And it's so much nicer. So it's good for marital harmony as well.
as well. So what about when it comes to eating? I mean, we talked about cooking. Eating is part of this process as well. Are you a believer in mindful eating, or have you've done?
Oh, huge. Yeah. Very much so. And like, I've always never been, I guess, like when I was in my 20s, I guess I used to eat, you know, on the couch in front of the TV, but yeah, I grew up where we had dinner at the table. I went to boarding school. We always, you know, ate meals at a table. So I just love that time and that kind of social, like, I love enjoying the food. I love the social aspects of eating at a table. So yeah, I think if there's one thing that someone's going to do to improve their eating, like focusing on mindful eating is such a huge thing. And there's just so much to be gained from like focusing on the food and enjoying the food and paying attention to it, like, and how much you chew, like that makes a difference to your digestion and your, you know, your gut health. Like it's all related. So there's actually a really great, one of my friends, Daria Rose, who's got a blog called Summer Tomato, and she's all about, she's a neuroscientist by training, but she's really into the science of weight loss and how to lose weight. And she's all about, you know, not dieting. And she's got a, I'll send you a link to it. She's got a, it's like a 5-day course, free course that you can do called the Mindful Meal Challenge, where she talks you through each day for 5 days. You choose one meal where you eat mindfully. And she, has like a little video that goes along with it. And each day you go through a different aspect of mindful eating, and it's really great to do. It's like really broadens your, makes you just appreciate the food more.
It's wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah. And also, to also get more in touch with your like internal satiety cues and to, you know, stop eating when you're full rather than stuff and then be overfilled at the end. So if people are interested in mindful eating, definitely recommend checking out Daria's free course.
We will pop that in the show notes. Sounds like a lovely person to talk to maybe on this topic
Well, she's just had a baby, so she's probably not now it's not the right time, but she's fascinating. Definitely. And she's really big on the psychology of eating as well, so I think you'd really like her, Ellen.
I remember I have dabbled a bit in talking to people about mindful eating because I really love the concept as well, and something I try to implement in my own life and try to teach my kids too, to pay attention to when they're hungry, when they're not hungry, when maybe they're just bored, and all of those sorts of cues. But I did this with a local yoga studio, and we actually got everyone to sit there with their hot drink, so they got to pick a herbal tea or something and a piece of fruit. And we did that exercise and you can find YouTube videos to this as well. I think they often do it with a raisin, but we did it with a piece of fruit where you sit and you actually spent a good 5 minutes just looking
at it,
feeling, holding, smelling, then, you know, peeling if that's what you were doing, putting it in your mouth, the taste in your mouth, the texture in your mouth, the experience of swallowing it. And I remember doing this myself just with I think I had a strawberry, and looking at this amazing, all these tiny little seeds and all the variations in color and the texture and the way you just discovered so much about this strawberry just from looking at it.
Yeah, exactly.
Normally do, you know, because you normally just stick it in your mouth or stick it in champagne or stick it in your lunchbox.
Yeah, exactly. Like there's a whole world of it. And one of the things that Daria talks about is like the mechanics or like how it feels if you have like a big bite versus a small bite, like, and yeah, just how it feels in your mouth. Like, yeah, it's fun, Ellen. I love that.
Wonderful. And again, very consistent, I think, with those themes of simplifying life, simplifying your kitchen, simplifying your meals.
Yeah. Yeah.
And slowing everything down for the sake of your well-being.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, you'd probably be interested. There's a book called Mindless Eating, and I'll send you a link to that. And that's like this, a group of, or a researcher, his name's Brian Wainsink or Wainsink. And he's all about like studying how much people eat and why. And he's got a whole book on like, there's like so many things that determine how much we eat that have nothing to do with our hunger levels. It's, you know, he's done research where there's, they'll like invite college students over to watch the Super Bowl, and they'll separate the room off. So one half of the room will get their empty glasses and they're serving them free chicken wings and free beer. So one half of the room, they like, we're constantly removing the empty glasses and removing the chicken wings. And then the other half of the room, they've just left everything to pile up. And then they were measuring how much each group ate. And you can imagine the group that had everything, the clean plate, and had no visual cues as to how much they'd eaten and drank, like ate like 40% and drank 40% more than the people who had this pile of bones in front of them. So, yeah, his work's really, really interesting from a, and things that, great tips that you can do to, eat less without noticing it. And, things like if you serve all the food in the middle of the table, like if you've got that, you're way more likely to eat a lot more. Whereas if you leave the extra potatoes in the kitchen, just that, even if it's only a few meters, like you're less likely to get up and get an extra serving of potatoes than if you just have to reach for them on the middle of the table. So yeah, there's so much to it. Yeah. And even like, pack sizes make a big difference as well. Like they've got people to cook different things, and one group was given small packs of spaghetti and small packs of spaghetti sauce, and then others were given like supersized packs, and then people that had the supersized kitchen ended up eating significantly more than the other groups. So, yeah, we're complex creatures, Ellen.
We are, and I think all those cues, I think that's something perhaps that we underestimate in our environment, the cues that are around us, the presence of food, the walking past the cafes, we have this booming cafe culture locally and it's wonderful, but you're constantly passing opportunities for coffee and food down the street, which triggers certain behavior. So look, some wonderful links in there too for all our listeners to kind of follow up with some of those sorts of things. Broadening out, we're talking about well-being and happiness. What would be your tips? We've talked about specifically around simplifying and what have you, but what would be your tips generally for happiness? What have you found that has worked for you for happiness and well-being?
So one thing that's been huge for me, Ellen, is journaling. I love to, like, in the morning, and having like a morning and evening ritual. So I get up in the morning. I can't believe I do this. I get up at like 5:15, which I've like never been an early morning person, but when you have children, that's the only time the house is quiet. So I love my morning times now. So I get up and meditate, and then I journal for a while. And there's a app, I just write in my journal now, but I used to use an app called the 5-Minute Journal, where they get you to, they prompt you on a few things. So it's like writing what you're thankful for, and then writing in three things that would make the day great when you get to the end of the day, and then also some affirmations. And I think that exercise of gratitude and being like just writing down what you already have that's amazing in your life is so great, because I think we're wired to be always seeking and onto the next thing and not appreciating all the beauty and the opportunity and the wonderful relationships we have in our own life. So that's probably my favorite.
And plenty of psychological evidence to support that as a strategy too. Yes.
Yeah. Huge. Yeah. And I think like the meditation thing is definitely great as well. Like I noticed over Christmas we were in Ireland, my husband's Irish, and we were away, and I just for one reason or another didn't meditate for like most of the time we were away, and I was just getting like a bit crazy. So it was nice to come home and get back into my calm meditation.
Yeah.
Has a huge impact on well-being. And then just, you know, eating well and sleep too. Like I've actually noticed like as I'm getting into my 40s that it's waking up and my sleep, like I'm way more sensitive to caffeine. So I really have been working on, you know, cutting out caffeine and reducing my drinking as well, which, you know, my former winemaker self would be amazed that I can actually live on so little wine these days. But yeah, it interrupts with my sleep, and I just know now how important sleep is, and if I'm not sleeping well, then it's nothing's going to be good. So I think focus on sleep and giving it the attention it deserves, and having a good evening routine's really been helpful for me for getting to sleep, and also I think it helps with staying asleep as well.
Definitely rituals.
Yeah. So more busy lunches, less busy dinners for me now.
Just swapping things around a little bit.
Yeah, just mixing the time of day. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. But interesting, again, that process of testing and learning, you know, actually paying attention to what's going on, paying attention to your body and to your sleep patterns and your sense of calm and doing things differently, you know, doing more of what works and less of what doesn't work.
Yeah, for sure. It's like, I think, that's one of the good big secrets to life, Ellen, or big secrets to adulthood is like taking responsibility and trying things out.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And where can everyone find you online?
Best place is to check out my blog, which is thestonesoup.com. Mm-hmm. And there's a free ebook. So if you go and check that out, you can download give me your email address and you can download a book of heaps of simple weeknight dinner recipes.
Beautiful. And your books, they're available online as well?
So I have a number of ebooks, and then I have a print book called 5 Ingredients, 10 Minutes, which is probably the most simple of them. And that's available on Amazon and usual booksellers.
Beautiful. We will put links to all of that online for our audience to be able to find out a little bit more. But I've thoroughly enjoyed our conversation today.
I think me too, Ellen.
All of this stuff about simplifying, and for me, I suppose I hadn't really thought much about simplifying food and cooking, and you know, I'm into decluttering, and I know there's been heaps of stuff around decluttering and removing things from your household and perhaps your wardrobe. I know that's been a focus on me.
I had
a buy year last year, and I lasted until November.
really?
As far as wardrobe and clothes were concerned, because that's a bit of a vice for me, but hadn't really thought about it in terms so much of cooking and
kitchen. There you go.
Yeah, so it's been fascinating, and I love that we've been able to link it to all these other things like mindfulness and well-being and testing and learning and the scientific process and all sorts of things.
Yeah, it's been great fun, Ellen.
Fabulous. Well, look, thank you very much, and I will make sure we have all the details in the show notes for our listeners to be able to find you and learn more about what you do and perhaps engage in a little more simplicity in their meals, their cooking, their kitchens and their lives. Thank you. I don't know about you, but I feel the need to declutter my kitchen drawers after that wonderful conversation with Jules Clancy from Stone Soup. I loved her examples of reframing kitchen and household tasks to find ways not only to simplify them to make life easier, but also to reduce mental clutter. Such a simple way to feel good, think well, and be well. Jules has given us great suggestions for books and courses, and you'll find the links to all of these in the show notes for this episode. Pop over to potential.com.au/podcast to take a look. If you're new to the Potential Psychology Podcast, please go back and have a listen to the great guests I've interviewed so far this season. We've covered digital parenting, building confidence, neuroscience and hormones, helping kids to manage stress, happiness, strengths and well-being, and mentoring and leading others. You'll find every episode in iTunes, on Stitcher, and via your favourite podcast player. While you're there, I'd love it if you'd leave a rating and review, as this spreads the word about the podcast and gives me and the team great feedback on what's working well. If you haven't already, you might also like to join the Potential Psychology community by signing up to my regular newsletter at potential.com.au/subscribe. This will keep you up to date with the latest podcast episodes and blog posts, link you to top articles in positive psychology, performance and well-being, and give you the behind the scenes here at Potential Psychology HQ. In our next episode, I'm talking to Laura Braid, our first international guest, about prisons, acceptance, and the sweet life. Here's a sneak peek.
This process of acceptance doesn't get rid of the anxiety, it doesn't get rid of the pain, but what it does do is it allows us to give up the struggle and allows those emotions to be there in the moment, because the reality is that they are there in that moment.
I'm looking forward to seeing you then. Have a wonderful week.